Well, next week is really going to be interesting from a macro perspective. We've got interest rates coming up. The MPC meeting's happening on Thursday. We'll know that. We'll know which way Moody's is going to go on the Friday. We've got the NUM strike. But to give us the skinny for the week ahead, a day late, thanks to yesterday's packed show, so I must apologise, is Chris Holdsworth, investment strategist at Investec Wealth and Investment, who's in our fine music radio studio in Cape Town. Evening, Chris.
Evening, Michael.
Busy week next week, as you pointed out to me, but let's start with what's important this week. CPI due out tomorrow, and I see consensus for February is 4.1, up slightly from 4% for January, but that's still below the midway point that the SARB has been targeting of 4.5%. What's your expectation?
Yeah, this continues a theme that we've seen for 2 years now. I mean, let's assume for the moment consensus is roughly right. I mean, if it's 4.2 versus 4.1, it's not going to make much of a difference. What we're going to see is for the ninth quarter in a row, inflation coming in below what the SARB thought they were going to see. And it's interesting for two reasons. One, that the SARB has a quarterly projection model, which they rely on to some degree, not fully, to give some guidance with regards to interest rates. But for two, the SARB has pointed out that inflation forecasts in the economy are consistently high, and they believe too high, and they're consistently attempting to get those inflation expectations to come down. But they need to look at home first. I mean, for the last 2 years in a row, their own estimates of inflation have been above what was realized, and I would think for them that that would be some form of concern.
For some form of concern, the quarterly pricing model, the QPM, should stand for quite possibly mistaken, I think, Chris, because to get it wrong for nine quarters in a row means it's more than just trying to anchor expectations. There's something wrong with the model. What's the FRA market expecting for rates?
Yeah, the FRA market has been remarkably stable. I just want to just defend the QPM to some degree, and that is what we're seeing now. And from our side, certainly, is evidence that their model has not been correct. But what we need to look at is if anybody else has been more correct. And I think what we'll see is that the sell side in general, and in fact even the buy side, have made similar mistakes. And you're quite right. There's a structural issue with that model which needs to be addressed. I'm just not sure that anybody else is any better at forecasting inflation. Maybe the problem is trying to forecast inflation at all.
Well, that's a problem. Models, I think Jason Zweig called them weapons of math destruction. how much confidence can we place in them? Sometimes one needs a bit of finesse and a bit of feel for exactly what the economy needs at a particular moment. And right now, I'm more convinced than ever that this economy needs an injection, a shot in the arm, a vitamin B12 injection, although Eskom probably wouldn't be able to handle that anyway. What are we seeing on the currency front?
Yeah, that's the point. So the currency has weakened a lot year to date because of these concerns about Eskom and Moody's and the like. But because inflation has been so low, we ordinarily, in an environment like this, we would expect a rate cut, a shot of vitamin B12 from the SARB. But in this case, they can't do it. They can't do it because the day after is Moody's, and they perhaps would view that as the SARB loosening its view on inflation. But they also they can't do it because Eskom is a binding constraint on growth at the moment. So even if they were to cut rates, it's not at all apparent growth would improve. We need Eskom to be solved for growth to improve. So they sit pat in an environment we've got low inflation and low growth. It's quite unfortunate.
Well, what are you expecting Moody's to do? Because if you look at it, we've discussed it on the show in the past, we already priced at pretty much junk and beyond anyway.
Yeah, up until today, we were of the view that Moody's wouldn't be changing their outlook. But I think the press announcement with regards to electricity is going to weigh on them. The fact that we've got this issue for a year or two, no deadline fixed, that has to come into consideration. And the upside, at least, as we've discussed before, is even if the outlook is changed to negative, that's 100% in the price. That's one of the reasons I think that we didn't see the Rand weakening materially over the days. Everyone expects a lot of bad news already, and that is reflected in financial markets.
It does also mean that if we get the opposite, if we start to get some good news that's unexpected, that we might see some upside for the Rand, but we'll have to see some real good news. I can't see it happening from the press conference that was held this morning. It does look like we have no clue about how to deal with Eskom, and we have to deal with Labour as well, which appears to be taking its gloves off.
Yeah, I mean, that was quite a statement from NUM. I mean, they're unhappy about the Eskom unbundling. They're unhappy about the IPPs. They're unhappy about Eskom executive. They've asked the management to resign entirely. They said they're going to go on a march on the 30th, coming up on the 30th of March, the day after Moody's, thankfully. But it's not at all clear that that secret ballot has been held. I mean, I haven't seen any evidence of that. Maybe they're going to announce it yet, but that is the law at the moment. If you want to go on strike, you have to have a secret ballot. But more than that, they threatened to shut down the country, in effect, for the week before elections. I mean, that's quite a political statement. I would think that's quite dangerous. And so they're quite clearly making a threat that they feel unhappy about how things are progressing. I'm not sure how those fears can be resolved.
There was a very interesting statement quite late in the day that was shared with me via an Energy WhatsApp group. And it's regarding NUM's meeting with the President, the Minister of Public Enterprises and Jeff Hadebe yesterday. And it says that it brought some elements of hope to workers. Now, obviously, you've got to pour through the Marxist-Leninist anger and angst and all the rest of it, and the language and the rhetoric, but the tone is certainly one of NUM being far more responsive to the president's message of this restructuring being done in a way that'll be mindful of jobs and to look after jobs. Well, we'll have to wait and see, because as you mentioned, it was a statement full of fire and brimstone that was released by NUM. And then we've also got this risk to the petrol price in South Africa, Chris, which is all on the upside at the moment.
Yeah, at the moment there's a 95 cent a litre under recovery. And when you look at the April determination for the petrol price, we have to add in what they announced at the budget with regards to the fuel levy and the road accident fund and the carbon tax. And if you look at all that together, we should be expecting a petrol price increase over 1 rand a litre 1 month ahead of elections, while we don't have a lot of electricity. I would think at this point the ANC would be quite concerned.
Oh, winter of discontent, here we come. Turning our gaze to what's happening over in Europe at the moment, apart from Brexit and that interminable mess, signs of something of a pickup from some of the industrial production numbers that we've seen.
Yeah, we've been concerned about European growth for a while now, and we were surprised by the extent to which these numbers are coming out for February. Industrial production have picked up almost across the entire Eurozone, except for Germany, which is where most of our fears have been. But if you look everywhere else, things have started to improve. They're not shooting the lights out, not at all. All that's happened is that the big fall in December has been corrected for. But it does assuage some of the worst fears that would have been out there for European growth in the short term, at least.
Yeah, I saw the Bank of America Merrill Lynch fund manager survey today saying that one of the most crowded trades is short European equities. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Encouraging retail numbers as well that we've seen.
Absolutely, and it's the same sort of story. We saw a massive decline in December, which got everybody very concerned, and we've seen a massive increase in January, but all of a sudden it's offset the decline in December. It's not the case that we're particularly high year on year, just high month on month to correct for what was a terrible month.
We know the Fed is starting its two-day meeting today, so all attention turns to Jay Powell and the health of the American economy. Housing starts is always a good indicator as to the health of the American economy. And December, that number was a real shocker, but at least we seem to bounce back a bit.
Yeah, exactly like Europe. In fact, we're starting to see a little turnaround pretty much everywhere you look around in the world. And what we've seen in the U.S. is housing starts picked up massively in Jan, again, offsetting the big decline that we had in December. Retail sales have also picked up in Jan, also offsetting the decline we saw in December. So I think globally we can be a little bit more relaxed about growth than we were certainly at least a month ago.
Another interesting element in the global macro picture at the moment in geopolitics is what's happening over in China. And there's been a lot of pressure on China to open up its market, to free up its market. And we see China has responded by passing a new foreign investment law. Some are still quite skeptical about this, though.
Yeah, it seems to have been done deliberately to resolve the trade dispute with the U.S., which has been the key focus for markets, in addition to the question about when the U.S. is going into recession. They've crafted this law from draft to completion. It was a mere 3 months, which is remarkably short for Chinese legislation and for any legislation around the world. And was crafted specifically to say that when foreign companies come, they no longer have to hand over intellectual property. And if a Chinese individual's working government has access to that intellectual property, they can't pass it on. And if they do, they're going to jail. Which seems catered, as I say, to concerns expressly given in the trade dispute. But having said that, some of the American companies are still saying, well, hang on, that's not enough. But to be honest, it's better than I think most people would have expected over this time horizon.
Yeah, very true. The Economist ran a very interesting story on the 16th of March around China potentially running its first annual current account deficit in decades. Now, obviously, the implications of that are profound, because for so long, China has sold more to the world than it buys from the rest of the world. That might be turning around, which might have very interesting implications for its need for dollars and its need to open up its economy. I don't know how much the Trump trade negotiators are actually picking up on this. It seems to be a mist in all the myopia.
Absolutely. I think you're quite right. It's a massive point. It's a change for the world, something we haven't seen for well over a decade. But also, it puts a spotlight on Germany, who has this massive current account surplus, 7% of GDP. Once the US is complete with their negotiations with China, they're going to be going after the Germans in an environment where growth is not particularly strong.
Well, that is certainly the next global trade and macro showdown. Australia still not looking all that great. We saw, we've discussed the retail side of things, but the housing market in Australia is really down in the doldrums. Is this specific to this sector, or is the Australian economy starting to display some real concerns here?
It's specific to the consumer side of the Aussie economy. You look at housing, they're down 16 months in a row. You've had declines in Aussie house prices. If you look at new building approvals in Australia, they're down 30% year on year. If you look at consumer confidence in Australia, it's down to levels last seen about a year and a half ago. And then more broadly, if you look at business confidence in general, it's down at levels last seen 3 years ago. And there's been a fairly steep decline. The one part of Australia that seems to be doing okay is resources due to the commodities exports, which we can chat about. But the consumer side, no, it's not looking great at all at the moment.
What's driving commodity prices? I want to stay on that for a second, because that might come to the rescue for Australia and hopefully for us here as well. What's driving commodities in an environment where there are concerns around global growth? Yes, we've discussed how things have turned around a little bit in Europe and the US recently, but overall, the IMF, the World Bank have all been revising their global growth forecast down.
Yeah, I think it is that series that we spoke about over the last couple of weeks, which is financial conditions, which reflect interest rates and interest rate expectations and credit spreads. And the actions of the Fed in indicating that they're going to be patient, and the actions of the ECB in giving similar indication, has led to a risk-on type trade, an expectation that growth is going to pick up. And now we've seen early evidence of that in US and in Europe. And that's led to commodity prices picking up meaningfully. Industrial metals are up about 7% year-to-date. Iron ore is up 15%, obviously partly due to that dam collapse. And even if you have a look at the Baltic Dry Index, which we spoke about last week, that's up too. So pretty much across the board with commodities, they're doing well. And it happens to be the commodities that we export. And palladium is reaching record highs. Platinum is being dragged up too. Gold is up as well. And that's one shining light for the SA economy, is that for once we're getting a bit of external stimulus, we just so happen to be scoring own goals at the same time.
Yeah, the only problem is, just as that turns in our favour, we can't keep the mines going and we can't power the smelters. I want to leave on a very interesting thematic note that you picked out here, Chris. We're getting older, we know that. It's not just you and I that are getting older every passing second. We're in a new world. More people over 65 than under 5 for the first time in history. What does that mean?
Now, this is fascinating. We're going to see this play out fully over the next 20 years. And there's been some work on this as to what will imply for markets. We'll need, obviously, a lot more healthcare services. We'll maybe need a lot more robots working in factories, because we, as older people, are not going to be working. But there's a further implication which hasn't been fully investigated. And that is, if we're landing up with the majority of people being over the age of 65 at some point down the line, who are retired and don't have a home loan and have savings, monetary policy isn't going to be as effective as it was before. Currently, you hike rates and people with home loans have to pay more and they're going to consume less, and the idea is that leads to less inflation. In that situation, however, people have got savings, they've got deposits. You hike rates and their income goes up.
They spend more.
They're going to spend more, and it comes with more inflation. So this is going to be a hot topic for the next 20 years. It's not at all clear how central banks are going to be able to control monetary policy, or rather have effective monetary policy.
Well, Chris, I think you've given me a great idea for my next panel discussion on macroeconomics. That was Chris Holdsworth, investment strategist at Investec Wealth and Investment.